this is the ultimate reminder. So the function of the teacher of God is basically kind of tell us what is our function in the situation that we're in. And it said, if the patient must change his mind in order to be healed, what does the teacher of God do? In other words, if someone you know have to change their own mind in order to be healed, what do you do? Then it says, well, can you change the person's mind for them? Certainly not. So, for those already willing to change their minds, you don't have any function except to rejoice with them because they've become a teacher with you. So, you've already decided to change your minds, and so my only function with you would just to be happy about you, the fact that you've decided to change your mind. So the people that we know that are on the path, then our function with them is just to be happy that they're on the path. That's interesting. That it didn't say our function was to fix them, teach them, tell them what to do. It just said, oh, you're going to try. Because I know that if you're on the path to awakening and you're sincere about it, then you're going to get the same guidance that I'm getting on my path that you're going to need. So all I need to do with you is be happy because you've already decided the right direction that you want to go in. And I trust Spirit will take care of the rest. And if it is something for me to say or do, you'll ask me or somehow or another, we'll get that across. So. Also, let me get this straight. The people that I know that really are working on themselves and really want to be more loving, my only responsibility is just to rejoice with them because I need to be aware that I have a more specific function for those who don't understand what healing is. Of course, it finds a person who doesn't know what healing is as a person who doesn't realize that they've chosen sickness. So a person who doesn't know what healing is a person who doesn't know that they've chosen to have a lack of peace. This is a very practical section because this section tells us exactly how to deal with people who believe that they're victims, or how exactly to deal with people who don't realize that they are powerful and that they're the creators of their experience. In other words, this is a section that tells us how to deal with 99% of the people that we run into. So I think it's really important. So it started out by saying that if you're around somebody who's also on the path, who's also doing some inner work, they've decided to correct themselves, then your only function with them is just to be happy. And that's the truth. I am happy anytime anybody decides to have some sense. That's just like, I celebrate. I'm thrilled. And then now it's just about to go into what it says that we do with people who she calls patients, who don't realize that they've chosen sickness or don't realize that they're, in other words, a person who doesn't realize that they are choosing their mental state, a person who doesn't realize that they're choosing the way that they're feeling right now. And the Course calls that someone who didn't realize they've chosen sickness because it defines sickness as a lack of peace. That sickness is not just you got something going on in your body. So it says, on the contrary, people who don't know what healing is believe that whatever they're going through chose them. So when you're with someone who doesn't know the truth, they believe that the lack of peace that they're going through is being caused by something that happened to them, and that they don't have anything to do with the way that they're feeling right now. It was the thing outside of them that's making them feel that way. He says, and guess what? They're not even open-minded about that. They're absolutely certain that they didn't have anything to do with how they're feeling right now. In other words, they believe that their body tells them what to do or what to feel, and then we obey. We believe that we can't help but to feel the way that we feel. Now, I remember that totally. Especially, I don't know, for some reason, that's one of the things I remember about being a child the most, is feeling like my feelings were happening to me, and I didn't have any control over them whatsoever. But yet some part of me always felt like I should have. It never made sense to me. What's the truth for you? It never made sense to me that I could have a headache or something, I couldn't just stop it. Or whatever I was going through, that I couldn't just say, end it. Stop it. It just seemed funny that I was having, almost felt like I was trapped in my body, and I was feeling all these feelings that I didn't have anything to do with that was happening to me. And sometimes I have to remember, have to really make myself remember how I was before I got on the path so that I can be more compassionate. Because a lot of things that I take for granted now are still startling concepts to people, and I forget that. Because sometimes you go into a situation and you'll swear you're going to try to be cool so you don't freak anybody out. But the truth is, you don't know that you've adapted so much of the truth that you're going to freak them out anyway, because you're just going to be in yourself is going to be so different from what they've used to seeing. So even when you're not trying, they still know something's kind of odd about you, you know. So the Course says that people who believe that what's happening to them is something that they chose them, is they have no idea how insane this concept is. And I like this line. It says, if we even suspected it, we would be healed. If we even suspected, the Course says, we even suspected that it was insane to believe that you have nothing to do with how you feel, then you would be healed. If I just even, I thought I at least suspected it. Then I found out that really, I don't even suspect it yet, because if I suspected it, I'd be healed. So there's, in some areas of my life, I'm still thinking the old way, and the areas of my life that I'm still thinking the old way, those are the areas of my life that it seems like I have a pattern that's continually repeating itself. So you can tell what areas of your life that you're excluding by which areas of your life the truth seems to be working in, and those areas of your life that you looks like you can't get the truth to work. So here's the answer. The area of your life that you don't think the truth is, that you don't think you're getting the result in, that's the area of your life that you still don't believe that you're the one that that's creating your feelings about it. And that's the area that you still don't believe you're the one that's creating it, even if you say you do. It's like if I got some area and I'm going, well, I believe that I create my own financial situation, but I still have my financial challenges. Well, no matter what you're saying, you don't really believe you create your financial situation. It's what the truth is saying. You're entertaining that idea, and you're letting that idea run through your mind, but you really, because the minute you really believe it, then you can instantly change it, or you would do something to instantly change it. So the Course is an exercise in getting honest with yourself, and it creates huge turnovers in class. it's amazing. It's amazing. Because it challenges people at a subconscious level. It's even those who think they like it. There's another part of them that called the ego that the Course talks about that is totally adamantly against what the Course teaches. And what it does is it subconsciously gets the person away from it very legitimately, but they don't really know why. It's not just the class, but they'll find that they intend to read and they're not reading, or they intend to study and they don't have time, or and they don't realize that that's your old self subconsciously putting up obstacles against the change that you're trying to make. And so part of the enlightenment process is really getting to the point that you what I call stalk your own ego.
See, to stalk, me, right?
Yes, Southern is stalk.
I got it.
stalk. That's not more intense anyway, don't it? I'm stalking you. You know, in other words, more and more every day I catch my own ego in action before it jams me up. I see myself trying to sabotage myself where I couldn't see it. I was so deep into it that I couldn't, it's like asking a fish to see water. I couldn't see my pattern. And so it had me so good that I didn't even know I had it. Except I kept getting the result of it, which was some lack of satisfaction in that area. And that's the most obvious clue that something must be wrong with your thinking, is whatever area of your life you don't have peace in. But sometimes it's hard it took a while for me to start working back from the result to the cause. You know, it's like I can get out of denial by simply looking at the result. And so there's a part of my mind that's addicted to having the result change without my mind changing. There's a part of me that really wants to stay exactly the way I am without the suffering that it entails to be that way. There's a part of me that wants to keep thinking just the way I do right now, but I want to get all the results of a new kind of thinking. Does it make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. So that part of our mind sits back and it waits for things to change without realizing that that's like sitting in a movie theater waiting for them to waiting to see another movie, but you haven't put another movie in the projector. You know what I'm saying? I'm sitting in the movie called Hitch waiting for them to play The Lord of the Rings, and The Lord of the Rings is in the next theater. And so you got to move to the next theater in your mind. And that's what I'm trying to do right now. And that's what I'm asking Spirit to do, is to join me with more people who are sincere about that. That they really have made, they finally got it now. I really need to change my mind. And I'm ready to do it. Now, if you're ready to change your mind, you have to be ready for the disorientation and confusion that goes with that. Because it will be disorienting and confusing if you're really changing your mind. If you're not changing your mind, it won't seem like you're going through disorientation and confusion and you're just thinking what you've always thought anyway. Because there's no way you can, I don't think you can totally drop a way of being and thinking and go to another one without going through some type of change. It just doesn't make any, I don't think anybody's that enlightened that they're going to make that radical shift without this, some disorientation and confusion. So disorientation and confusion is a very natural state to go through when you're sincere about spiritual growth. And one of the delaying maneuvers of the ego mind is to make us think that just because I'm on the path to peace, I should be feeling peace all the time. And so when I don't feel peace all the time, I need to beat myself up because it means I'm not getting it. Be on the lookout for that one. Actually, if you're doing it right, you will be disoriented and confused. Broken into by periods of clarity, broken into by periods of disorientation and confusion, broken into by periods of clarity. And so when you hit those new levels of clarity, you're going to get to the point that when you have one, you're going to run for it with everything you got. You're going to try to accomplish as much as you can accomplish while your vision is clear, so that when you go through the next level of disorientation because you're changing, you have things so set up around you that you don't have to worry about the world while you're in the process of going through your disorientation and confusion. You're not also trying to make sure you can pay your bills. You're not also trying to fix your relationship. You don't have all this other stuff while you're in the middle of the distraction, because while you were clear, you created a firm foundation around yourself that would support you through the periods of disorientation. Many people do it just the opposite. Mm-hmm. They try to make the greatest strides when they're most disoriented and confused because they're scared. And then during the periods of clarity, well, they just mess off. of course, everything's pretty much going okay. Everything is cool. So what we do is we just kick back. And we don't realize that if you're one of those periods that it looks like everything is going smoothly, then that's when you should put out the most effort. Because if everything is going smoothly, everything is going smoothly. So you could accomplish a lot more when you think you don't need to than you can when you think you need to out of fear. And that's when people make their biggest error. They're so desperate, then they go ahead and do stuff that they know doesn't make much sense because they're desperate and they're afraid. Where disorientation should be a time that you can focus on your truth and meditate more and study more. That's what needs to happen during the periods of disorientation, not trying to make these great strides in the outer world. I'm going to finish this last sentence. It says, he says, we suspect nothing. That means to us the separation is quite real. We were saying it earlier. It's like this seems so real that we don't question it. The Course talks about how if you're hurting and it looks like somebody else hurt you, it talks about how you don't go beyond the obvious, and that's how we get trapped. In other words, it looks like you hurt me, so why should I go any further than that to see how I created that, which is the step on the other side. It was amazing doing 9-1-1. How during 9-11, people would get so mad at any public figure who dared ask the question, what did we do to create someone wanting to fly a plane into a building and kill 3,000 of us? Did y'all notice that? Mm-hmm. That? I mean, people would get so upset because they thought that was they thought that was blaming the victims. Because it's obvious, we were innocent, we weren't doing nothing. The plane came from the enemies and they just killed these people. See, that's the obvious. And so the Course is saying, if you want to be enlightened, you want to go beyond the obvious, which is, why would somebody hate you so much that they would fly into a building to kill you and themselves? Now, I know a lot of people hate people, but I don't know how many of us hate people enough to be a suicide bomber. So you got to hate somebody and have a real belief in afterlife and that God is glad that you did it, which is even scarier in a way. for people to think that gives them a special place in heaven to kill you, even if they kill themselves. I don't know many Americans that's got that kind of dedication to anything. you know, one suicide bomb over here bring this country to the knees. Two of them. Everybody be scared to go out their house. So, you know, it's funny. It's like, we talk that stuff. But it's easy. Remember that guy on the East Coast a few years ago that was shooting these people in the service stations and all that stuff? And they had that whole town came to a standstill. So, you know, I think that everything is trying to get us to look at ourselves more honestly and be more honest with ourselves about where we are. So anyway, so the court says that we tend not to want to look beyond the obvious and see what it was that we did to create it. He says, because it seems real to us. You did it to me, and I'm hurt, so I don't have to go any further than that. Okay, now, since let's talk about that a minute. Anybody have any questions or any comments? Because if I say something that frightens you, usually if you would tell me what that is, I can give you another way of looking at it that'll help you let go of the confusion and the fear. Because it's usually just the ego trying to stop you from getting that concept. Or just a comment or a realization. I think it's great to take advantage of the intimacy that we have, other than just making it all lecture.
I think when you question the situation, and if you go beyond, if you want to go beyond, you're afraid to go beyond because then you'll feel the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that eliminates you or prevents you from getting enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
Because the responsibility in your mind will fall back at you.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Because that's exactly why people don't want to take responsibility, because they have a hard time discerning taking responsibility from taking blame.
Mm-hmm.
And so most time when people hear you say you're responsible, then they say, well, I'm to blame for what happened, because they don't realize that blame is just a form of self-attack. That actually, if you're taking responsibility, instead of you feeling guilty, you feel peaceful. That's how the way you can tell taking responsibility from taking blame is more about the way you feel, more than what you're telling yourself mentally. You know, in other words, if that's why the Course in Miracles, I love questions. That's why the Course in Miracles foundation is built on the idea that we're sinless and we're guiltless and we're innocent,
right.
But that we make mistakes and mistakes can be corrected. Because he says, if you're going to feel guilty about learning, then you're never going to be a happy learner, because you'll never want to make a mistake, and you'll feel so guilty about any mistake that really comes natural with learning, that you'll never take a chance to do anything because you want it to be so perfect the first time. Don't y'all see that a lot? I see that a lot with myself, and I see that a lot with people all the time. It's like they don't go out on dates and they won't give themselves relationships because they're afraid it might not work out. In other words, it's like, I got to be guaranteed that when I go out, and this has got to work, and so therefore I won't go out and try it. Instead of going, I'm going to go out and I'm going to see if this works. And if it works, that's great. If it doesn't, then I'll have to try, move on and see what's going on and try again. But we kind of get into this vibe that we can't make a mistake. We shouldn't make a mistake. So then we feel guilty. So the Course teaches that. It's a whole section in chapter 14. It's called The Happy Learner. If you get a chance, you might want to read it, because it deals specifically with this issue of how do you learn and stay happy? How do you learn and not feel guilty? You know, and this is what you're saying. So I think that's good. I think that's good to know that if you realize that feeling guilty is a request for punishment, that also makes your mind want to choose against guilt. Okay, I made a mistake. I feel guilty. It's the same as saying I made a mistake. I need to be punished for it. And that's why people don't like to accept responsibility, because I think that when you're going to take responsibility for the accident, then you're going to be the one that's going to get the punishment for that accident. You know, it's the same kind of
that's
attitude.
That's an ego response.
Yes, right. Yeah. We see taking responsibility as a form of punishment sometimes. If you can take responsibility, you're going to have to get the punishment that you deserve for doing that. So there's a lot of mental conspiracies going on against taking responsibility. Anybody else having thoughts about that? About who? What kind of person is a person that the Course would define as a patient? What would be a sick mind from a Course in Miracles perspective? From what we just talked about, what would be a what would a person do who doesn't know the truth? How would they handle situations? How would they see situations?
As they're being a victim.
There you go.
Lots of blame.
Okay. Are there still areas in your life that you see yourself as a victim? Can we get out of denial enough to be honest? There's still some areas.
Based
that,
on what you said today, yes.
Yeah, right. That, you know what's so cool about what you just said? Based on what I said, really, that's why the Course in Miracles is such a trip. Because the once you read it, then you got something to base your decisions and your choices and your thoughts on, and then you go, well, according to the Course, yep, I still got some areas that I still think I'm the victim of. How do I know? Because I still feel like I'm in this situation and I can't change my feelings about it or my experience of it.
So what do you do then?
Well, see, the thing of it is, you have to really and truly make the realization that you are not taking responsibility. See, what happens if in a situation like this where we read this in a book, we'll think because we just heard that we really think now that we think that it's just us not taking responsibility. And the truth is, when I really accept in my heart, when I accept for real that this is an area that I'm not taking responsibility in and that's why I'm having a problem, then I'm going to actually take responsibility, and then the situation will change, and then my perception will change, and then I'll hear my guidance, and then I'll be told exactly how to deal with the situation. So what comes next is not something I can specifically tell you, so much as what comes next is you'll be able to see and hear the way out of it in a way you've never been able to see it before.
Good.
Okay, does that? Because I really want to, what I like about the Course is that it's constantly trying to empower us to go within and make contact with our own inner guide. And there is no, at the level of the world, there is no concrete rule for every situation in that sense. But what we need to do is open up to the inner guidance that we can be told how to deal with the situation. So in my own situation, if I realize that this is an area where I have not been taking responsibility in, what I do is, in spite of the pattern, I keep just telling myself I'm responsible for what I'm experiencing in this situation right now, even if it looks like I can't change it, even if it looks like I'm stuffed, even if it looks like I don't know what to do with it right now. I'm going to do the best I can from moment to moment. But the one thing I can do is stop saying that it's something outside of myself that's making me go through this. At the very least, I can do that much. I can stop saying, it's your fault, if you change, I'd be happy, it's your fault. I can say, I'm making myself mad, I'm screwing myself up in this way, I'm the one that's making me do this, I'm the one that's choosing this. Even if I said it in anger, every single time I say it, I'm empowering myself. Every single time, I call it plugging up a leak in my energy, a crack in my gourd. I'm patching myself. I'm healing myself every time I go. I know my relationship situation right now is a call for God. It is a total trip, but I'm the one that's making it, and I'm the one that's making myself feel the way that I'm feeling. So, therefore, I'm telling myself I have power in this situation, and if I tell myself that enough times, I'll use that power. I'll let that power be used, but it's like a muscle. So in the beginning, I have to build up my strength by just telling myself that over and over again, even if I can't do anything about it yet, even if I don't have a way out yet. The beginning is to do what I call spiritual aerobics.
Okay.
You see? I remember wanting to lose weight one time, and I sat in the chair every day. and I jogged around the block in my mind. And I lost 15 pounds. And so it was a great exercise.
No, you didn't really.
Yeah, I really did. I really lost weight. And so that was when I really began to really work with the ideas that it was my thoughts that was creating my body and my reality. First I got into metaphysics, which is basically the idea that thought is created and that what you experience is your thought. So I learned all the creative visualization stuff and the creative mapping and the writing down what you want. And what I found out was that I either manifested the things that I wrote down or I had the opportunity and just didn't do it. I noticed that I really could believe. I really could jog in my mind and lose weight. I really could do a treasure map and watch stuff. And so it was like the universe was taking me through these stages. So first I learned that my thought was created, but I guess what? I found out too that everything I created was neutral. So if I didn't love myself, I had a lot of guilt and fear, I would just take whatever I created and still make myself as miserable as I was when I didn't have it. And that made me aware of the psychology of spirituality, that it doesn't make any sense to manifest with an insane mind, with a wounded mind, with a wounded heart, with hate and malice, because you're just going to take all that energy and you're going to use it to make yourself miserable through the things you manifest. And then that was where the Course came in. And the court says, well, we're going to get to the root issue. You could do this over a long, long time, or you could just go to the root issue, which is the belief in guilt and separation from God. And so if you deal with your sense of separation from God as being the only problem you have, then that will affect every other area of your life and heal it. Or you can just deal with each area individually and take forever, which is the favorite way that people like to do. I work on my relationship till I'm about to pass out, and then when I finally get there, I go work on my financial. You know, so and the course is saying, you know, instead of dipping the water out of the bathtub with a teaspoon, why don't you just pull the plug? And the plug is you think you're separate from love, you think you're separate from God, you think you're alone, you're trying to do it by yourself. That's the problem. And it takes a lot more dedication and commitment to go to the root issues than to deal with the superficial levels that you feel safe playing with without ever changing. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like when you ask a person what they're upset about, my personal theory is whatever they mention is not what they're upset about. What they're telling you they're upset about is what they feel safe with. That's the safe problem. That's the one that they don't mind saying. That's the problem. Because the real one scares them. To get in touch with your real feelings about things, it's scary. So everybody can pop off what their problem is. Well, my daddy had to been different. I would have been. My bosses, you know, they'll tell you in a minute what the problem is. The problem is the inflation. You know what I'm saying? And you know it's not inflation. You know that there were people who got rich during the Depression. That there's always people who prosper in any point, and no matter what's going on, it's because of their consciousness. But our ego always wants us to believe if we can get the whole, you know, if I can get the external handle, then I'll be happy. A conscious being knows that's the lie. And I've been repeating that over and over and over again because I need to remember it. We all need to remember. We can't hear that enough, really. You know. So if you're around somebody and they're just like the people in the room and they tell you, you know, I got my path and I know the direction I want to go in right now and I know what I want to do with my life, according to what we just read, what would be our response?
Celebration.
Not fixing. Not telling me that I shouldn't be on my path and I should be in the book that you're studying. You know, you're not in the course, you're missing the boat. You know, it's like, oh, really? The Power of Now by Eckhart? Oh, that's moving you right now? Right on. Because I know it's going to take them to the same place I'm going, and I want you to get there fast as you can, and the fastest way would have to be through the form that already appeals to you rather than trying to convert you to my form, which is going to it's going to slow stuff down. That's why I think missionary work is so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're going to go out and change the beliefs of everybody in the world to one belief. It'd be better for everybody to work through their beliefs to that same place of love and responsibility and consciousness really fast. But as you learn that the world is full of insane minds, you start to feel compassion for the people in the world because they're not insane. Of course, it's what happened is that they've learned insane lessons. So everybody is sane, but they just learn. Of course, they just learn insane ideas. And the once you can separate the person from their insane ideas, that's what the course calls separating the person from their ego. I used to always wonder what that means. You got to separate. You got to not see the person's ego, and that simply means I got to realize that person learned to look at things that way. The way they're acting is the way they learn to act. But they are separate from that learned behavior. And so they could be reached and they could actually respond another way if they just got another idea. And so this next part is going to say what we do when we're around people like that. It's going to be so cool that it's going to be hard for people who need to fix people to handle this. So if you're a caretaker fixer, you're not going to be thrilled with this, okay? So you get a chance to find out which one you in. Because it's easy. It's too easy. It's so easy, I forget it. Okay, he says, all right, so let's say you got a person, I'm going to make this really understandable to me. let's say there's a person in your life that's really upset and going through a lot of stuff right now, and they don't listen to reason, and they don't believe that they created it, and they do feel like they're a victim, all right? He says, to those people, you come. The reason why you come is to represent another choice that they've forgotten. Your simple presence, if you're a person that's pretty much taking responsibility and focused on the truth and you're peaceful and they know you, your simple presence is a reminder. There's some people that I don't have to say anything and they'll be talking about stuff or complaining about something. They go, Earl, I know what you're thinking. I'm the one that really created it. It's like I didn't say nothing. I'm just sitting up there, you know, they just go off on me, you know, saying, I know you think that I know, but this really one. Now, I know there's some situations, but this is the one. This is really, I'm really a victim here. You know, this didn't happen. Okay. So your simple presence is a reminder, right? He says, now, what you do is you let your thoughts ask for the right to question what that other person has accepted as true. In other words, you are a messenger of God, a messenger of love. So that means you are the symbol of healing, which is salvation. Just by being there, you are the symbol of peace. You are the symbol of love. Because they're all upset, right? He says, so what you do in your mind is you ask the patient for forgiveness for God's Son in his own name. In other words, while you're there, you stand for the alternative. Now, what does that mean? It means that you are all upset, but I've got the truth in my mind, which is that you're not a victim, that you are a powerful being, that you're not alone, that you do have a higher power, that there is another way to look at it, right? So I'm coming in benediction, not to heal you, but just to remind you of the remedy that God has already given you. I'm just really there to remind you of the remedy that God has given you, but you've forgotten about because you're so upset. So while I'm with you, in my mind, I'm asking for the right to question what you believe. Notice that it said in my mind. Because what happens is that if a person believes they're a victim and they're really deep into it, the minute you try to tell them that they're not, they become even more entrenched in that belief system, trying to convince you how wrong you are. So you would actually help them more by being quiet, because if you're quiet, they'll say how they feel and then move on to something else. If you try to change their mind and they want to be right more than they want to be happy, then they're just going to jig into a defensive posture about their position and get mad at you. So that's why when you're around someone who won't listen to the truth, you don't tell them. That's why God is quiet. Notice that whatever creates us never comes out in a booming voice and says anything. That there's got to be something smarter and more intelligent than we are. There's got to be beings more advanced than us, because that's just the way it is. We had to come from something with more intelligence than we have. But the thing I notice about wherever I came from, it's pretty quiet. And it doesn't interfere. You know, it's like if I go out here, and I want to do something, it seems like it doesn't interfere. It doesn't grab me by the arm and say, Earl, you know you shouldn't do that. So I noticed that whatever created me is quiet. So I've been experimenting with that. Just as much as possible, just be quiet and just bring peace into the situation. And I've had more situations correct themselves since I've been quiet than I was ever able to get healed by trying to talk to people.
I bet that's hard for you, Earl.
Actually, it's so easy for me because I know that it's really important for me to receive. As I'm talking in the class, so a lot of times if I'm with people, one of the things that happen a lot, especially in social situations, is that I am quiet, and the first thing that they'll do is ask me if I'm okay. I can always count on it. Are you okay? Are you all right? Because they're so used to that. They don't realize that. No, if I'm in a social situation, number one, I need to receive my gifts. And I feel like everybody around me has as many gifts as I have to offer. And that's my opportunity to be the learner and to get the messages. So I'm really in a listening posture when I'm in a social situation. Plus, it's always a great time for a person to try to heal me up with all the stuff they disagree with what I said when I was in the group. And a lot of times I don't feel like getting into that. I just want to socialize. I just want to hang out. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but because they won't bring it up in the class and say, well, you know, I disagree with that. I see. So when I'm alone, then they want to tell me all the stuff that they see different about what I said, and forget that I said that it's okay that you don't see it the way I see it, because I'm not really trying to convince you. I'm just here to remind. And if you want to accept that reminder, fine. If you don't want to accept that reminder, fine. That's how I show my love, is by freeing you to accept or reject whatever I say. So your believing me or agreeing with me is not important for either one of us. What's important is for you to honor yourself enough to follow your own guidance. And if your own guidance says what I said was a bunch of crock, and so therefore you shouldn't use it, then you just need to just don't use it, and then use what you want to use. But there's no need to inform me, really. There's no reason for me to know. And that's not saying I'm not open to people sharing me whatever they want to share. But I want to empower people by getting them to recognize that it's unimportant whether anyone else agrees with them, in order for them to follow their heart. that the more you make it so that you need to get somebody to agree or to change their mind, then you actually slow yourself down on the spiritual path, because you could just accept that truth for yourself and just move on with it and be gone. But the minute I go, oh, I just got a new truth, will you agree? Yes, I just got a new truth, will you agree? Yes, I just got some guidance, will you agree that my guidance was right? And will you agree? Will you agree? You see what I'm saying? Then that's slowing me down to have to need everybody to say, Earl, the way you're doing it is correct. I could just accept it for myself and go ahead and use it, and then I know whether it works or not anyway. And if it doesn't, I just won't do it anymore. It's so, I mean, this book is so cool. But the biggest challenge is to love yourself enough to let the answers be that simple. Because the Course teaches that the ego is the part of the mind that believes in complexity. So unless you're telling people very complex theories, they tend not to want to use anything that's simple. That's why the Course can seem really complicated. It's as complicated as you need it to be for you to hear it. And as you don't need it to be complicated, then it gets simpler and simpler and simpler, to the point you think you're reading a magical book. So it'll mess with the person that thinks they're a PhD physicist, that they need all the levels and the deep depth and the analyzation. It'll drive them out of their mind and they'll love it. You know what I'm saying? Because people like to analyze it, they love it. It's all complicated and stuff. And then those who just want it simple, to go, there's love, there's fear, I need to choose for love. And instead of fear, I need to choose for peace in this situation instead of conflict. Oh, you mean if somebody really want to get on the spiritual path, all I got to do is be happy for them? Great. Oh, you mean if I'm around somebody that don't want to take responsibility, all I have to do is just be there as a reminder in my mind, remember the truth about them for them while they are choosing to be in their stuff, because my presence is healing just by me keeping the truth in my mind, even though they're not ready to hear it yet. Man, that's easy. And if there's something for me to tell them, Spirit is going to use me to tell them. And I probably help them, and I don't even remember. Because helping people the most are usually the ones who walk up and say, man, something you said to me changed my life. You say, what was it? Mm-hmm. And then the people that you single out and you say, you know, I'm going to help them. You know, those are usually the ones that's now in therapy as a result of your help. So they might have been halfway all right till you came to you. The Course calls it consciously. I love it. He says, consciously selected miracles can be misguided. I think that's a great line. For me to consciously decide who I'm going to help can be totally misguided. Don't you think? Who do you resist the most sometimes? The people that you know, who you love, who insist on fixing your life or telling you what's wrong with it and what you need to do differently. What are they doing? They're doing a consciously selected healing. They consciously selected you for their healing. So beware the next time you consciously select. It'd be better to preface it with, you know, are you open to, with your mind, you know, are you open, would you like some feedback on that? See, that sounds like they make, just opens a mind wide open. Would you like some feedback on that? And they say, well, yeah. Or they'll say, no, I'm pretty cool about that. And can you take it when they go, well, I'm pretty cool, I'm all right. You know. So this is easy, y'all. It's not hard. It's just different. Nothing that I've said today is really hard. It's just different. So then it goes on to say, well, really, the truth is, it's not your hands that heal. It's not your voice which speaks the word of God. You merely give what has been given to you. Very gently, you call to your brothers in your mind to turn away from death or pain and say, behold, you son of God, what life can offer you, which you choose sickness in place of this. Okay, so you can always change. Of course, you can always change the form as long as you don't change the meaning. So, in other words, I'm sitting with you. You're totally upset. And in my mind, I'm going, you know, I want you to take a look at what life can offer you. Would you still keep choosing sickness and upset instead of this? And so in my mind, I'm just going, boy, I want like for you to choose what happiness would offer you. Boy, I really would like to ask you, if you really want to choose how you're feeling right now instead of peace. Now, how do we know this doesn't work? How many times have any of us sincerely done this? But isn't it interesting how the mind will judge something before it ever uses it? You ever notice that? It's like, how many times have you actually been around somebody really upset, saw yourself as merely a reminder, thought the truth in your mind without saying it to them and ask them questions like, wouldn't you like to have peace instead of this in your mind? How do we know it doesn't work? Could the things that work, could they possibly be the things we haven't tried? Any questions about that paragraph? Any thoughts about that? That's some juicy stuff. How many of y'all are addicted to fixing people? Yeah, go ahead.
Can you explain the one that since it says, as God's...
Okay.
They ask the patient for forgiveness for God's son in his own name.
Yeah. Let me go to that sentence. I can see reading content. Yeah. Okay. First of all, let's take a look at the Course in Miracles definition of forgiveness. The Course in Miracles definition of forgiveness is not, I'm overlooking what you've done, you no good bum, because I'm higher than you. Okay, which is the world's level of forgiveness. I'm supposed to overlook what you really did to me, and then this is somehow going to make me a better person. But I really think you did it to me, but I'm going to overlook it, so I've forgiven you. No, the Course's idea of forgiveness, one of the definitions is the correct perception. So if you were to say, you know, I'm asking you for correct perception in your own name. I'm asking you for release of this in your own name. I'm asking you for the correct interpretation of what's going on in your life in your own name. See what I'm saying? When you use the Course in Miracles definitions of it, the book makes a lot more sense. The challenge is that we read the Course and we put our definitions on the words, and then it freaks us out. Then people used to say to me, well, why don't they just say that? Why don't they just say it's ask for correct perception? I says, well, because it's trying to give you new interpretations of the words you're going to hear in the world all the time. So that when you hear the word forgiveness, what you're going to hear, you'll give yourself the correct interpretation of. So now you don't have to fight hearing that word. Or if you hear the word Christ, and you got a problem with that, but you know Christ just means the extension of God's love, then your mind will go, well, that's an extension of God's love. So you'll start to hear all the words that you had resistance to, but you have a new definition. So everybody can teach you, and everything is teaching you. You turn on TV, whatever they say on the TV, it'll be teaching you the truth because you're giving new interpretations of the words that they're saying. So it's a very powerful process. Yeah.
What is the distinction between, because I am a caretaker, but people pour their hearts out and tell me they're all the troubles. And so what is the difference between compassion and caretaking?
The difference between, to me, compassion and caretaking is that when you're being compassionate, you're coming from a place of recognizing your power and recognizing the power of the other person. And you're realizing that they're just not recognizing the truth about themselves, but they're a very powerful being. If you're coming from the place of a caretaker, then you feel like the person really is weak, and that they really need it's almost like there's nothing whole about them, and they are weak, and you're getting some sense of self-esteem from feeling like a caretaker. Usually, from an ego perspective, is a person who gets their self-worth and their feeling of self-worth from how much people need them and how much they seem like they're doing for people. That's why they don't empower the people they love to be strong. You know, you've seen parents, you've seen people like that, you know, they get threatened. They get threatened when the person doesn't need them anymore because they're getting their sense of self-worth from the person needing them. So a caretaker needs somebody that they can take care of, to take their mind off of themselves. Somebody that's compassionate realizes that you're not a victim of what you're going through, but they've been there. And they can also imagine what it would be like to go through that. And they want to remember your power for you. And they want to empower you. It's whatever they can do to empower you. So it's not saying that we wouldn't reach out to help and heal each other. It's just that I would be doing it from a perspective of you being a powerful being and not the perspective of you somehow lacking in some way. Mm-hmm. And trying to make me feel good. Did that help?
Yes.
Yeah. It's so much of it is just little tricks on, you know, because they look the same. I mean, a caretaker and a true healer can look from the outer like they're both doing the same thing. You know, the caretaker's bringing the pie over so you can feel better because they just, I don't know, a great person for bringing you the pie. That must really be a great person. See what I'm saying? So it's really building my self-esteem. You know, someone is doing it from love. They just, the giving of it is the reward. They're not even thinking in terms of building themselves up from it. They're okay whether you do it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like that. So I give more since I stopped being a caretaker, which is funny, because I used to be a caretaker. And I really thought I was loved because I would get so many phone calls a day from people needing my help. So my phone rung. So many ways now I can see why my first marriage tanked. You know, it's like when I look back now, it's like it's not about forgiving her or her forgiving me. It's really about me recognizing that I did the best I could from where I was, but I was also making errors in perception and judgment that I didn't know I was making at the time. And that's how I can forgive myself. You know what I'm saying? But I remember that. The caretaker that needed everything, that was glad to get 30 phone calls a day, you know, with people needing, I must really be loved because I'm the first person. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of ask yourself, well, really, do you really want to be the first person that everybody think about when they're miserable? Because what would happen is I'd be the first person that people would think about when they was miserable, but they wouldn't call and invite me to a party. They wouldn't call, when things were going great, they wouldn't say, hey, come out in the boat that I just got today. I'm feeling, I would be the person they think of the minute that they felt as miserable as they could be. As if my get off in life was just hearing miserable, misery stories. But that somehow or another made me feel better. And that's not true. That's not true. I'm just like anybody else. I want to be thought of in loving times as well as in other times. That's not saying that I'm not willing to be available, you know, but at the same time, you have to watch because you will slip into that role. Nobody put me in that role. I put myself in that role. I created that reality. You see what I'm saying? If people would treat me that way, it's because some part of me wanted that and needed that. And so that's, to me, that's when you start to wake up. It's when you say, oh, wait a minute. I'm the one perpetuating that pattern. You know? If you read 1,000 books, but you find yourself always attracted to the same kind of person in a relationship, you might want to take a look at where your consciousness really is as opposed to where you say it is. Check out most of the people that you know that's on the path. And many times, not all the time, but many times, whoever they're in a relationship with isn't. And they'll be irresistibly drawn to them. Now, when I say not on the path, I don't mean that that person couldn't have come to the same conclusions that you've come to through their own life experience. I'm not talking about a person that's come to the same realizations you've come to that just didn't come to it through your particular path. I'm talking about somebody that you're attracted to who definitely sees themselves as a victim of circumstances, that they're out here to get it, that they don't have anything to do with the creation of that. And then the next thing to do is don't be hard on yourself. I'm not trying to pick on you, okay? Then ask yourself, If I was to be totally honest with myself, could this be some sort of a subconscious control issue? That I feel safer being with the person that it seems like I know more than they do, than I do being with the person who's an equal or one up a little bit above where I'm at. You find most people always choose people who they think they know more than they do, especially if they're on the path. And they'll be so like totally mystified. And they don't realize that that's a form of control. If I'm more conscious and you're the unconscious one, then I become the teacher and I become the one who knows everything and I'm the one that's directing. And that makes me feel what? Like I really am a great spiritual being, and it also makes me feel safe because I feel like I'm in control of this situation. But if I'm with a person that's my equal, then I have to be vulnerable because I can't run any games down on that person whatsoever because they're going to meet me at the same place I am. So everything I've said, that I want to be more open, that I want to be more loving, that I want to be more giving, equal demands that. There's just no excuse. You can't say, I can't open my heart because this person really doesn't open theirs and they're closed, but I'm open. I want to be intimate, but I'm with a person who just doesn't know how to be intimate. You don't want to be intimate if you're with a person that isn't open to intimacy. But you get a chance to say you do, which makes you feel good about yourself while you're still not having to open up because they don't know how to open up. Equals are scary. Like the Course says, it's with equals that the miracles happen. The miracles do not happen with unequals. Miracles happen with equals. You know, so that's just a little something that came through me. I don't know why the hell it did, but I think it was good for me anyway. Hopefully it was helpful to y'all, but it was off the hook for me. Because it's real easy for me to get into that kind of relationship with people because of being in the teacher role. It's real easy for me to be in situations where people think that there's some inequality coming now. Or, as long as they like me, then I'm equal. Then if their ego gets threatened by me, then I become a person who's misusing my power. It's so interesting to watch that happen in relationships. How you go from, I know you're not really a teacher. you know, I know it's just a role, but we're all the same. We're all adults, and you can just be yourself. And, you know, and so as long as they like me and things feel cool, that's great. But the minute that their ego gets threatened and it feels like something they're being, somehow being presented with something that they think they're not ready for, which is in their own mind, then the minute fear comes in, inequality comes in, and then someone is the perpetrator and somebody is the victim. So it's real. So you have to be aware that when a person becomes afraid, that's when they're most prone to have distorted perception and attack. That's why the most important thing the Course teaches is to try to create a safe space for the people that's in your life. Because if they feel safe, they don't attack. If they feel afraid, they get distorted vision and they attack. And what do? Well, a person gets afraid of us, we get mad, then we start the argument. What is that doing? It's taking us deeper into fear, which means our perception is getting more and more distorted. We're seeing everything less and less clear. Bam, now we got a real issue. We got a real problem. So always go for the peace first, because if the person can keep their peace, they'll stay open to the solutions. The ego, the Course says, tells you the more anger you direct outside yourself, the safer you become. That's what the ego tells you. You know, the more I attack you, the safer I get. The more I bomb Iraq, then the safer the United States is going to be. That's the ego's reasoning. And the challenge for spiritual people is that it looks that way. And that's why you can't convince someone who's unconscious that it's not true. Because it looks that way. And they don't go beyond the obvious. I guess what my inner self is telling me to share with you today is that there's a way to go to self-realization that can be relatively smooth, and there's a way that you can go to a self-realization that you're always delaying yourself and frustrating yourself. The frustrating way is needing the approval of others and the agreement of others. The smooth way is to apply for yourself. And don't try to get anybody else to do it. That's the easiest way. Because in your doing it, you're going to help everybody around you, because you're going to represent such a cool energy that they're going to be glad to have you around, but they might not want you for a personal friend. Because if you're a personal friend, they have to stay on it too much.
You still have to do it?
Well, if I'm your personal friend, then you're being constantly confronted with you're the one that's responsible, you're the one that's responsible, that you're the creator. Mm-hmm. But if we see each other now and then at a party or a class, then you can really like me. So you find that when you become more conscious, that you tend to, unless you're with another consciously evolving person, you tend to get the best energy from people when you touch them lightly and you're not around them a whole lot. They love you. I'm loved three times a week. Four times a week. See what I'm saying? But if a person could deal with me all the time, it'd be a whole different thing. And so kind of keep that in mind if you're becoming more peaceful, that you have to touch people lightly. You know, if you're going to really connect with someone, then you want to connect with someone that's basically on the same wavelength, intimately. Intimately. Wavelength doesn't mean same spiritual teaching. I'm going to keep on saying that, because I'm not saying everybody's not into my path. I mean, you can meet people, and I have, who never consciously studied anything at all, and they already take responsibility, they already let people be, they already fun to be with, they already accept you as you are. They just already mastered it and they live in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, well, you happy, but you happy the wrong way. You need to come back and come in and start studying my teaching. I know you happy, but it's not real happiness. You don't have real happiness unless you go through what I've gone through. So, alright. Well, this next paragraph, I'm not even going to this next paragraph. It's I want to make sure I have time enough to cover this one. Because this is a head turner here. This is the big one. So I'm going to stop here. We got about 6 minutes, so I'm going to stop at this point. Now, did anybody hear anything that was helpful to them today? Anything that was food for thought?
Well, I would like to know more about how miracles happen with equals. And we
okay.
Examples, but
the way that miracles happen with equals is that with equals there's no competition in reality. The Course says that what creates the idea of competition is that it's the one idea that creates the most separation. That I got to get it for myself to the expense of everybody else around me, and I got to be better than everybody else to the expense of everybody around me. Mm-hmm. He says a miracle is a correct perception. So a miracle is not the way that people classically think of a miracle. When the Course says miracle, it says if we saw things correctly, it's a miracle. And that's why it calls it a Course in Miracles, which is really funny. if we have a right answer, it's a miracle. So it calls itself A Course in Miracles, and it says a miracle is a correct perception. So if I'm seeing you as my equal, that we're both equal in power, that we're both learners, that is a miracle. And we can join. We can really heal because I see you as an equal. You're not better than me. I'm not better than you. And that's where the love happens. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. You know, that if I see you as my equal, then I am, you and I both have the same capacities of power to use, even though we might use it in our own way. If I see you as an equal, then I'm not going to try to take advantage of you. You're not going to try to take advantage of me. If I see you as an equal, there's nothing to block us from connecting. But if I see you as unequal, we miss each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or separate.
Yeah, that was the exact same thing. Unequal is just another term for separate.
Okay.
The perfect definition of separate, being separate, is being unequal. Even though it says, it'll look like we are different in time. Like, I might know how to operate a computer and you don't. So in time, it might look like we're different. But where we're equal is that we're both created beings. Okay, that's what it means by equal. We all have the same potential. We all have the same power.
I guess I'm disturbed by about someone who's sharing their hurts. As I mean, that are those, are they being a victim? Or are they? I mean, I think that's a human experience, sharing your hurts.
It's a difference between me sharing how I feel and blaming everybody for how I feel.
Okay.
You see, I share how I feel now. With people more now than I did before I got into the truth. And I don't feel good all the time, and I don't feel happy all the time. And if I'm around somebody to tell me they do, then I know they're in denial.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what they say. Mm-hmm. They're in denial. You can say, I'm the happiest person in the world. I am. Okay. Then what are you doing in this world?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you here? Well, just to fix all the rest of y'all. They clear, you know, just try to get y'all together, you know. And the Course is saying, how in the world can you be different from your environment, really? You know what I'm saying? What are you doing so different from everybody around you? And if it is true that you're here to heal everybody, and you are here to bring the love, well, then part of the healing is for you to let them know you're just like them. You still wouldn't be saying, I don't have any kinds of fears about anything whatsoever, and that's supposed to make everybody around you feel good. I would much rather be around somebody who can relate to what I'm going through. You know, I would try to make Jesus my best buddy if he was in the body. It'd be too much stress. You know what I'm saying? I'm having a hard time dealing with somebody stealing my parking space, and he's raising the dead. I'd have a big inferiority complex. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather be around somebody just a little bit, but maybe you can raise a cat. You know what I'm saying? You're not up to the human yet, you know. I don't mind you being where I am, and maybe a little bit more. You know, that's cool, but I don't want you to be out of sight. That I just feel totally inadequate. I make myself feel totally inadequate in your presence. Nah, that's not fun. Not for me. That's just me.
I think he had those human experiences and thoughts, and I was probably right. I think it's odd that there are so many conservative religions that make him their poster child, because when he was here, he was an outcast. He was a hippie. He thought differently from everybody else. And
yeah, he wasn't
he
exactly
was that
popular.
Guy. Now they're going to be like, take a bath.
Well, they would be the first people that would crucify him if he showed up not looking like he does on the pictures.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like we don't realize that people have an image in their mind about what they think that looks like. And the truth is, we're in a world where everybody says they want to be different individuals and respect individuality, but we're also in a world that that's what people criticize you for the most. It's when you do dare to wear what you want to wear, look what you want to look like, even though we all said we really want everybody to respect our individuality. But that's what I'm condemning in you, is your individuality. I want you to do it like I do it. Yeah, so Jesus would now be as radical as he was then. He would probably be somebody that everybody would still get totally upset with, because he would be bringing such a different viewpoint into the world that we would be tripping, just like they tripped. And I'm excited about that, because I know that's about to happen. Because it's too much of the mass consciousness is beginning to accept the idea that their thoughts are creative and that they have some responsibility for their experience. When I first got into this back in the 70s, that was heresy. Now the stuff that everybody that told me back then was heresy, I'm seeing it on TV everywhere with the most conservative religious teachers up there saying, you got to see it, you got to visualize it, you got to, you know, and they used to be like, that was witchcraft. Okay, so when you got the whole mass consciousness accepting something, then that means some brand new paradigm is getting ready to reveal itself that's going to be shake them up just as much as the idea that thought is created did 30 years ago. And I'm curious to see how all of us new thought people react to it. Because I found that we can be just as stuck and judgmental about what we think is supposed to be right as anybody else can. Yeah, but you notice that?
Yep.
We get just as attached to our ideas as anybody else does, you know. But something big getting ready to happen, y'all. You mark my words. And I mean, it's not a long way off either. There's some big consciousness realization that's getting ready to happen. So I'm going to pass this around. Thank you for sharing with me, you all. I appreciate that so much. And tomorrow at 12 noon, I do a class. Be willing to just attempt to remember the truth in your mind form. And if you do feel compelled to help, would you be willing to ask their permission first and say, would you mind are you open to another way of looking at it? You know, if you could just do those two things this week and then see what happens in terms of your peace, it would be amazing. It would be absolutely amazing. And that's what it's about. It's about our peace so we can hear our guidance and then we can be more helpful to everybody. That's what we're doing. So I appreciate you all. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you haven't had a chance to sign the contact list, please do. And if you want a copy of today's class, that's always available on the CD list. And come potty like a big dog. Saturday night.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm. Let your sister introduce me to your sister.
Even though she's scared, you don't look three of her.
What's going on?
Right.
Thanks for coming today. That's good. I'm glad. Yeah, you just kind of look at it some different ways.
Hey, Dollar, thank you for your. Oh, I love it. How do you feel,
man? I need this sometimes. I don't know. I'm not supposed to be in agreement, but it helps.
Yeah,
it helps. Thank you, brother.
See you later.
Okay, bye bye. Cool, bye, brother.